Welcome to the Functional Health Coaching Show, where we are here to support and answer your questions so that you can help people on a deeper level get real results and grow your health coaching business. Do you have questions you want to ask live on the show? You can call in every Friday at 2 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time to 1-347-637-1378. Are you looking to increase your credibility and grow your health coaching business using functional lab testing and data-driven protocols so that you can confidently solve health issues? Well, we have the course for you. Go to fdn.today/show to learn more and sign up today. Okay, let's join today's episode.
Well, we hardly say happy Friday to you guys there. Hope that the week is going good for you guys. You've tuned into the Functional Health Coaching Show, sponsored by the FDN course. And it is March 20th, 2020. And boy, it's been some interesting times that are going on right now. So it's good to connect with you guys. Maybe this, some of the only ways we really should or want to connect at the moment is the long distance. So we're sort of used to this, right? FDN as a company has been long distance remote work for quite a while. We're all spread throughout the nation, and we're kind of used to the technology thing. And then also with the Friday call here, connecting with you guys each week. So it will have to do for now. And we hope everybody is doing well and making the best of our current situation going on right now. Won't dwell on it too much. You hear a lot of things out there, but we're feeling positive about things and keeping the faith. And we're going to have an awesome guest for you guys today. So looking forward to bringing on a lady that you, unless you're living under a rock right now or have been for several years, you definitely know who we're talking about. So Dr. Terry Walls is going to be on with us here in just a second. We're getting the connection here on the line to be just right. We do have a few announcements that we'll make here, a couple, especially graduates this week. So, in spite of everything going on, people are still moving through the course and graduating, and definitely that's what we encourage you guys to do as well. So, if you find yourself with maybe a little more time right now, it's a good time to put energy into something that's going to, benefit you in the future once things have settled down. So, before we bring Terry on, Dr. Walls on, I will say hello to Reed here. I think, Reed, are you on the line?
I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, you're sounding good. Sounding very good.
Okay, well, great. I'm looking forward to talking with Terry.
Indeed.
And
indeed,
welcome,
I am too.
Everybody.
Indeed. Well, hey, we'll celebrate some graduates here, and then I'll jump on and read if you got a few things you might want to say before we talk to Terry here. But two graduates this week that we want to say great job, tremendous work. We've got them. They're still in the U.S. here. We've got sort of in my neck of the woods here, Jolene Miller or Joe Miller from Missouri. And then also Nina Kaur in New Jersey. I had great conversations with both you ladies. I'm excited for what you're going to do with your certification and where things are moving. I'm proud of you for what you've done, and we want to celebrate that today on air. So great job. All right, Reed, I'll turn it over to you for a second here if you want to make any kind of comments or announcements. Otherwise, we'll bring Terry on.
Well, I've been keeping folks up to date pretty much on what's going on with the FDN course, some of the changes that were thrust upon us, which are actually turning out to be really good for us. The fact that one of our labs dropped out of business has just really expanded our horizons in terms of what other labs we're looking at and using. I'm working right now on phase one of the new lessons. I'll start phase two right after that. And then phase three is going to be a complete overhaul of the course. So we're going to take care of the immediate needs, getting students the new labs that they need to know. By the way, it's opened up relationships with new labs in a really nice way for us, expanding our horizons there. And then when the comes time to redo the course, we're going to make sure it's just going to look a bit different, so that updates don't look funny, because you're always going to have to update it. And so we're going to do it in a little more modular way so that any updates can be taken care of easily without interrupting the flow and without having to write the whole damn thing over again. I don't want to have to do it again. And other than that, you know, on the coronavirus thing, I am sitting at home by myself on a hill, on a mountain, overlooking a lake, and nobody's around, and it's getting pretty damn lonely. But, you know, I'm getting by, and I'm going to, you know, sort of wait and see what happens. I got lots of food and toilet paper, so I guess I'm okay. Other than that, I'm really looking forward to having Dr. Terry Walls on, because she's got an amazing story. So let's introduce Terry and have her not to take up, you know, like respect her time as well.
And exactly. Give people what exactly. They want. So. Exactly. So, well, read a little bio here on Dr. Terry here. And speaking of revisions, I know she has a revised version of her book that's coming out here. It's come out already, so we'll let her tell you about that. So revisions definitely are part of the whole process, especially with this industry, right? So wanted to always make things better. So by way of a bio here, we have Dr. Terry Walls. It's an Institute for Functional Medicine certified practitioner and clinical professor of medicine at the University of Iowa, where she conducts clinical trials. In 2018, she was awarded the Institute for Functional Medicine's Linus Pauling Award for her contributions in research, clinical care, and patient advocacy. And I think maybe that's awesome stuff, but if you know anything about Terry's story here, she's also a patient with secondary progressive multiple sclerosis, which confined her to a wheelchair for 4 years, and she restored her health using diet and lifestyle. Program that she designed specifically for her brain, and she now pedals her bike to work each day. And she's the author of The Walls Protocol. You guys are probably familiar with that. And Dr. Terry, we had a little issue there a little bit with the phone. I think you're on the line now. Why don't you say hello, and we'll see if we have a good connection.
Hello. How are you guys?
Wonderful. Doing great. Welcome to the show.
Good.
I'm thrilled to be here. And I'm so glad we have technology that lets us stay deeply connected, even though we have to have physical distancing right now.
Oh, yeah. Amen.
That is true.
To that.
That yeah. is true. That is true. Well, again, thanks for being on, and we definitely want to let people know about the revised version of your book that's out or coming out. But maybe... maybe start a little bit with your story. It's just an absolutely amazing one. So I'm sure you do that quite often with interviews. But, yeah, tell us a little more about your story if someone doesn't know about it.
So I'm a conventional internal medicine doc here at the University of Iowa, and I was deeply skeptical of special diets, supplements, complementary alternative medicine, functional medicine. But God has a mysterious way of teaching us. In 2000, I developed weakness in my left leg, got a big evaluation, was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. I saw that it was a progressive illness, and so I decided to treat myself aggressively, doing some research to see the best people in the country, take the newest drugs, but I went relentlessly downhill. Within 3 years, I needed a tilt-reclined wheelchair, even more aggressive drugs, at that point, Tysabri. I continued to go relentlessly downhill. Now I had been introduced to work of Lauren Cordain, and I had implemented the paleo diet in 2002. But it was the following year I needed the wheelchair. Then I, went on Tysabri, continued to go downhill. I spent 4 years getting steadily worse. By the summer of 2007, I was so weak I could not sit up in a regular chair. I was beginning to have trouble with brain fog. I'd had trigeminal neuralgia for 27 years that had been getting steadily worse. And so that pain was much more difficult, electrical face pain. And fortunately, I had discovered the Institute for Functional Medicine. I took their course on neuroprotection. And so I'd added these supplements to my paleo diet, and it helped my fatigue somewhat. But then I had this really big aha moment, which I'm sure you guys will relate to, that what if I redesigned my paleo diet in a very specific way based on what I'd learned from my review of the basic science, my review of ancestral health principles, and of functional medicine. And so, again, that was several more months of research. And so I created a very structured paleo diet designed specifically for my brain and my mitochondria. And to my amazement, within 3 months, my pain was gone, my fatigue was gone, my brain fog was gone, and I was clearly getting stronger, and I could sit up to eat at the table again. And I was beginning to walk with a walking stick around the hospital. And at 6 months, I was able to get on my bike for the first time in 6 years, and I pedaled around the block. My children were crying. My wife is crying, and I'm crying. And then in a few more months, my wife has discovered a courage ride, bike ride, 18.5-mile bike ride. We sign up as a family. And again, to my amazement, I'm in fact able to complete the ride. And once again, my children are crying, my wife is crying, and I'm crying. And of course, this radically changes how I think about disease and health. It will change the way I practice medicine, and it would ultimately change the focus of the research that I do.
I'm floored by, you said, 3 months and then 6 months, the changes that happened within that short amount of time with what you're doing. That just strikes me first. That is absolutely incredible to see that quick of a change where you just, I guess you were just amazed that you saw that kind of turnaround that quickly?
True. I mean, it is remarkable. In addition to, you know, the diet, I was working very closely with a physical therapist. Before I entered medical school, I was an athlete in martial arts, taekwondo, full contact free sparring. So I had developed a relationship with a physical therapist that had an athletic practice. And so he had me doing this very intensive physical therapy. It was an extraordinary level of commitment I had to all of that that led to this extraordinary speed of my recovery. But you know, if I dropped away from the electrical stimulation of muscles, or if I dropped away from my diet because I was traveling for the first 4 years, I could tell that I did not tolerate that at all. That within 36 hours, I would have a drop in energy, a drop in clarity. So I had to figure out how to travel food and how to travel through devices.
Gotcha. So one thing came to mind as you're telling your story there. So I'm amazed, obviously, your story, your resilience there. So when things are looking so bad, this maybe is a good lesson for everybody any time in life, maybe especially now when things look so bad, things are low. How do you keep going, or what kept you going and looking for answers and not just giving up and resigning yourself to the diagnosis?
You know, what really helped me a lot was thinking about Viktor Frankl's book, Man's Search for Meaning, and one of his principal concepts is between every event in our life and the response to it, there's a space. And in that space, you make a choice that defines your character. And, you know, when I was diagnosed, I had two very young kids, ages 5 and 8. And I had knew, obviously, that I wanted my children to be successful emotionally and financially. And I had presumed I would teach them all of those necessary skills through athletics, through wilderness travel, through whitewater kayaking and mountaineering. And of course, it was really rapid that was not going to be an option. But I still knew that this was what was most important to me. So as I was becoming more and more disabled, I'm having to think about tools do I have to teach them resilience. And what I realized is, well, I can teach them that you don't give up because life is difficult. That, yep, life's not fair, but you get up and you do the best you can every day. And so, you know, I got up and I did my workouts, although they kept getting smaller and smaller. And I gave them chores, and they would, you know, they were young kids. They're complaining about their chores, that none of their friends that know anything about dishwashers or washing machines. And I'm so empathetic, like, oh, yeah, that is so unfair. I appreciate why you're upset. But, you know, those are your chores. it's really unfair that I can't do those things, but I can't. So I'll keep working. And these are your chores and your responsibility, and you will still have to do them. And yes, life's not fair, and it's not fair to have MS, but I'm going to keep going to work anyway. And so my kids would stamp their feet, you know, at different times, and say, you know, Mom, I think you're glad you have MS, so you can lecture me about chores. And of course, you know, my kids are a little horrified that I tell that story now, but you know, truly, they saved my life because they gave me clarity that I couldn't give up, because then I'd be modeling for them that when life is difficult, when it's really hard, giving up is one of the choices you can make.
Mm. Wow. Touching. I think we all have to find that thing that's going to guide us, that's going to push us through when things get tough. I think that's with any health journey. No matter where you're at, we're looking. Mm-hmm. We have to have that thing, because it's going to be life is tough, but especially when you're on a healing journey. And many of people listening here, FTM practitioners, most people don't become an FTM practitioner just on a whim. They hear something that might attract them. Most of us have our own health challenge or journey or struggles, and so I think we all can identify with a lot of that, not to the level that maybe you've got or have dealt with. Firstly, not me for sure, but I always like that, you know, how do people get into this situation? How do they make it through these things here? So especially right now, a lot of that's going on. We've got a lot of mind games going on. That's kind of life, isn't it, sometimes? So it's working through these things and keeping our mind strong during this. So what was the response maybe of maybe colleagues, people you'd work with as you started to get healthier, yeah, see these changes go on? What was the response from people you knew?
When people saw me walking, they're like, oh, my God, Dr. Walls, you're walking. What happened? So they're thrilled if I'm walking. They, of course, assume it's because I'm taking one of the new experimental drugs. And when I explain, I did this through my dietary and lifestyle needs. Then my chair of medicine said, Terry, this is so important. Your clinical assignment for this coming year is to get a case report written up, which I did. And then, you know, the next thing that happens is I start changing how I practice medicine. And you know, I'm talking more and more about vegetables, more and more about diet and lifestyle, less and less about drugs. I'm teaching the residents more and more about biochemistry and physiology, and they expect to hear about the latest drug, but they're hearing about broccoli and turmeric instead. And then my chief of staff calls me back in, and I have to have a meeting, because people are complaining because I'm not following the standard of care. I have that conversation, mm-hmm, and I'm reviewing. You know, fortunately, I'd been preparing for this. I brought with me an armful of scientific papers. And I went through them, said, here's the science behind what I'm doing and why. He goes, but Terry, you can't use the same protocol for everyone. I said, well, I'm just trying to improve the mitochondria and their cell membranes. And I think we all have mitochondria, we all have cell membranes. So, and then I'm watching to see if I have to adjust their medications downward. So I don't want anyone to become over-medicated. And so in the end, my chief of staff and my chair of medicine became huge fans. And when I was getting criticized, I said, well, you know, if she hurts anyone, she'll go through peer review just like everyone else would. But in the meantime, her advice for us to clean up our diet is pretty sound advice. But certainly, there were plenty of folks who thought I was an eccentric, oddity, pretty quirky, unusual physician. And then, as you know, the research progressed, and I'm presenting our findings at Research Week every year. And then we start getting publications. And then when we start getting philanthropic donations, then suddenly I'm not quite so quirky, and now I'm being seen more and more as this brilliant visionary.
You know,
another challenge to get through.
Just some friends.
Yeah.
And say, yeah. And first of all, I find it really interesting that you quoted Viktor Frankl, who was a World War II, you know, like a concentration camp survivor, who obviously went through hell and high water, to say the least. But he was a really brilliant, I think he was a psychiatrist, right? And so he kept himself and realized some pretty important things about, you know, what the Germans could do to him and what they couldn't do to him, which you quoted and used nicely. But, you know, that you compared, you know, having MS to that kind of living is lets people know what kind of a hell that it really can be. I mean, it's very debilitating. And you know, I just want to also, I mean, I think it's a fair comparison. And it's like torture, you know? And I find it interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. Trigeminal neuralgia is a, you know, I have lesions in my spinal cord very high up and a couple in my brain. And so if my microglia get activated, my trigeminal nerve will turn on, and it's like a cattle prod being stuck into my temple region, and little jolts of electricity come across my face. And, you know, over the 27 years, they were getting more frequent, more severe, much more difficult to turn off. And when they're turned on, light, sound triggers the pain, a breeze triggers the pain, the touch of your children trying to comfort you triggers the pain, and they can be so severe that it obliterates all the other sensory input. Sort of the visual stuff is replaced by white. I can't maintain motor control, and my knees will buckle. Occasionally, I would fall. And my fear, the fear that, you know, I come to terms with the fact I might well become demented, because I could tell I was being at brain fog. I was clearly on my path to becoming bedridden. My fear was that the pain would turn on and that the pain clinic would not be able to get it turned off, and that I would be left with this continual zinging of electrical face pain. And I never, you know, that was my terrible, terrible fear. And I'll tell you, with Dr. Gevorkian, the physician who assisted folks with assisted suicide, the number one diagnosis was people with trigeminal neuralgia due to MS. And I totally understand that, because when all of your sensory input is transformed into that electrical jolt of pain, that is profoundly difficult.
Yeah, I'm not sure if everyone here remembers Dr. Kevorkian or not, but he was actually put in jail for his assisting in suicide, you know, and he was really trying to do some good work. I mean, I guess there's a lot of reasons why you wouldn't want to do that, but he was really famous for it, you know. Matter of fact, I gave one of my ex-wives a gift certificate to his office. That might have gone over everyone's head. I don't, but not to make light of what we're talking about here.
Yeah.
But so you know, basically compare having MS to being tortured, and certainly it is a tortuous thing. And what I find, because, you know, we've been doing this 20 years, Terry, it's so obvious there are connections between what you eat and what happens in your body. I mean, you're made of food, but there are weak links in metabolism, and they're so highly individualized. You know, I have my weak links, and you have your weak links, and we can eat the same food. And it would, go ahead.
Absolutely. We all have the unique genetics that we have, and then we have the microbiome that helps us run our chemistry of life in a lifetime of toxic exposures. And sometimes we would benefit greatly from much more specific support during that healing phase. And so we absolutely need to do diet and lifestyle interventions. It's really based on that ancestral health, evolutionary medicine, evolutionary biology, and functional medicine. And in the VA, I had really no advanced testing that you're teaching your folks to do. And we had marvelous, marvelous results. But of course, I couldn't fix everyone. And so there would be some folks who clearly would have benefited from additional guidance and support from this more thorough investigation of their biochemical pathways.
Yeah, no question about it. And just on that note, you know, that some people, yeah, mostly the medical establishment, I'm sorry to say, relies on these ancient studies, like the Cochrane studies and things like that, that say there's no correlation between diet and vitamins and minerals, diet and supplements, and the improvements that can happen in multiple sclerosis and many and almost every other condition, truly a medical condition. And so you are proof with it, and that's why we admire you so much.
So it's pretty interesting. If we look at my sequence, I was a low-fat vegetarian diet for a while. Then I adopted the paleo diet. I still declined. I was reading my basic science, and I created this supplement cocktail for my mitochondria, which helped my fatigue a little bit, but I was still declining. I took functional medicine courses, had a longer list of supplements. I stabilized. And then when I didn't know how, like, I should redesign my food around this list of nutrients that I was using for my supplement cocktail, that's when this magic happened at breathtaking speed. And now I have an army of dietitians on my study team. So we love talking about nutrients and food and chemical pathways. It's my perception that most of our nutrition research, we see the epidemiology that can tell you which nutrients are associated with better outcomes for neurologic and mental health and heart disease, et cetera. And then we try and do these things in a supplement study. The supplement studies are nearly always very disappointing. Well, I think the magic is in the food, because food is vastly more complicated than the supplements. And then often that will, just doing diet and lifestyle will have a dramatic impact and is often enough. And when it's not, doing further investigation and having a very specific supplement cocktail in support of diet and lifestyle, I can very often have, again, another dramatic level of impact. The standard American diet and get by with supplements, I'll be very disappointed.
Yeah. I'm into that. it's definitely a foundation of what we do. Right? So it's diet, rest, exercise, stress reduction, and supplementation. It's part of it, but exactly, you can't out-supplement a bad diet and the stress and all those things. So we're 100%
correct
behind that. So how has maybe your message research changed in the last, 5 years? What have you found out that is new?
So the first thing is the reasons our patients don't do well. The number one reason, the most common reason, is that our patients struggle with the behavior change aspect. That biologically we are wired to seek pleasure and comfort. And that's why we have sex and why we eat food. And those are vitally important for the species that we do both those things. But it makes it incredibly difficult for us to give up these pleasurable, addictive foods that have been designed to be very addictive. And it goes against millions of years of generations of our biologic evolution. So when we're asking people to forego today's pleasure for tomorrow's theoretic benefit, that's a very, very difficult ask. for most people to achieve. So I put a lot more information and strategies for people in the behavior change process that we used in my clinics, in our research, in the lifestyle clinic at the VA. For example, we talk about the importance of knowing what is your why, what is your personal mission, that most of us, we're going to crave pleasure and comfort. But there's probably something that you care about so deeply, or likely someone you care so deeply, that if they were in a house that's beginning to be on fire, without thinking, you would run into that house to save that person. So you'd be willing to forego pleasure and at risk endure pain to save something that's really important to you or someone that's really vital to you. And so we have to help people understand why they would want to make these big lifestyle changes and then create incremental steps so they could be successful. So we have, I have a much more robust chapter there. Then we have a more robust chapter on the incremental steps to change your diet from the same American diet sequentially and how to identify when oxalates may be an issue, when histamines may be an issue, who would benefit from a elimination diet, who would benefit from a ketogenic diet, what are the many ways that we could get the benefits of ketosis, what are the various kinds of fats that we could use on a ketogenic diet, what kind of monitoring needs to happen. So lots more information on the diet and how to apply stuff. And then I also talk a lot more about the supplements. We've updated the supplement recommendations and how to work with your primary care team. Because I realized that while we have many more functional medicine trained folks, there's still people will have difficulty having enough access to all of that. So we've talked about how to work with your primary care doc to get the appropriate monitoring and support as you implement the concepts I teach. And we also talk updates on neuromuscular reeducation and neurorehab. So there's been a lot more science there. And then, the epigenetics, the microbiome, stem cells. What are the indications for stem cell transplant? How do you get one? What could we do ourselves that either suppress our stem cells or increase our stem cells so we could create a better environment there? And I talk about metabolic resilience, emotional resilience. And I get to crow about all the research that we've done and the recognition of our research lab by some of the other neuroscientists, other MS scientists as well. So about a third of the material.
Well, sounds like quite an update there. So is the new book out now, or is it just been released in the last week or so?
Was just released. It was released on the Tuesday.
Okay, we're hitting it a neat time there. So
yeah,
you guys definitely go check it out there. It's, the original book was not part of my library, I'm sorry to say, but I've followed your work before. So this is going to be part of my library and go back through that again. And I think each author, each person has their, obviously, the specialized research there that you do. But I like to hear that, we all talk about some really similar principles there, but I like to hear other people's take on that, their way they communicate that, reading through that. Every time I read a book in that manner, it always helps me to do a better job talking with my clients, because that's what we want to do. And that's the Walls Protocol, A Radical New Way to Treat All Chronic Autoimmune Conditions Using Paleo Principles. So there it is. You guys need to pick that up. Pick up the revised copy. If you've got the older version, pick that up for sure. I guess one thing I was going to mention here, Terry, was you also have a seminar that you conduct. So maybe tell us a little more about the seminar.
Yeah. So what I've been doing now, this will be our sixth year, we have an in-person and a virtual event where I teach these concepts and I bring speakers to come in that support teaching the diets and lifestyle concepts. We have a beginner's track, we have an advanced track, and then I have an additional day of clinician where I teach the clinicians the Walls Behavior Change Model. We laugh, we sing, not necessarily in tune. We dance, not necessarily with the beat. We practice the skills that really sustain our ability to adopt and sustain these new health habits. It is a marvelous, transformative time. And you know, we have people coming from all over the globe. We have practitioners from all over the globe, including folks over there in Asia, in Africa, in Europe, South America. So it's very much an international experience.
And it's growing. That's wonderful. Do you, I'm curious about this. Do you see, as far as people interested in learning about your protocols, is there a certain demographic, like age or background, or is that pretty varied also?
So when people come to the seminar, I would say about a third of them will have MS. A third will have some other systematic or systemic autoimmune condition, such as rheumatoid arthritis, systemic lupus, systemic sclerosis. And another third will have other health issues. It might be neurologic, as in Parkinson's and cognitive decline. It might be a children's issue with attention deficit or autism, or it may be mental health, anxiety, depression, or, you know, a variety of multiple medical problems. And people come back year after year to reconnect with old friends and celebrate the progress that they're making.
Do you have a lot of practitioners that attend?
Yeah, we do. So we have practitioners. You know, last year, I think we had 45 practitioners come get trained and take the exam. And then to make it easier, because we're trying to always expand our group, we have now added a virtual practitioner training as well. And so my international folks appreciate that. And actually, we have quite a few folks in Europe. And also we're getting a lot of commentary from them about how, at least in Europe, the public is much more interested in hearing from a functional medicine perspective what all they can do to help lower their risk of acquiring the COVID-19 problems. I found it very interesting in my conversations with the health practitioners. People are talking a lot about COVID and giving me updates as to what's going on in their countries.
Anything you want to share? That's kind of current event there. So anything as far as what you're hearing from other folks?
So certainly we talk a lot about the things that at greater risk for having a severe disease requiring hospitalization, age over 60, complicated medical problem with diabetes, heart disease, severe obesity, lung disease, taking disease-modifying medications or transplant drugs that compromise your immune cells, having a systemic autoimmune condition, and having a poor quality diet, being a smoker, having a high level of stress, having a lot of exposure to air pollution. So as you sort of run through all those risk factors that you have, while you can't turn any of them off immediately, we can, through our diet and lifestyle choices, either make those risk factors a much bigger problem for you if you have a terrible diet and you're still smoking and high stress, no physical activity, then you're accelerating all those risk factors. But if you're doing a great job of maximizing the quality of your diet, adding stress reduction, adding gentle daily exercise, getting out, getting sunlight, sleeping, you're making all of those potential risk factors at least less of a problem for you. And so, at least over there in Europe, people are absolutely wanting to see and hear from the functional medicine and integrated medical practitioners, you know, and the health practitioners to get equipped with what are all the things that are under my control that I could do to get the best environment possible. And of course, in Europe, it's like what's probably happening here in the U.S. People are being asked to do physical distancing. So it's pretty hard to get to go see your physician. It's a matter of who can access that information through virtual visits, consultations, e-courses, et cetera.
Well, guys, we're talking with Dr. Terry Walls. If you didn't know, didn't hear the beginning of the call here, so enjoying the conversation here and learning so much. You know, this is a live call, so I'm going to open it up to Dr. Walls, if you're okay with that, open it up to some maybe some callers
please.
If they've got some
Let's
questions. We may not, but I'll throw it out there. So if you guys are listening now and want to ask a question, hit 1 on your keypad, and I'll bring you on. Or the number to call in is 347-637-1378, and again, hit 1 on the keypad, and I'll bring you on. You can ask Dr. Walls a question. He's happy to help out there. So a lot of you guys are listening today. I thank you guys for tuning in, as always.
Question. So
go for it, Reed.
Terry, I have a friend whose sister was diagnosed with lupus, and
yeah.
She was pretty much written off as incurable, and she was on that same downward spiral from you. Now, it's not the same thing as multiple sclerosis, but it is a downward spiraling inflammatory condition, right, where the immune system
yes.
is pretty pissed off. And she finally, on her own, just because she was debilitated, stopped eating the tomatoes she'd been growing in her backyard, which she sort of just inadvertently determined that it was when she started growing the tomatoes in her backyard that her first symptoms appeared. And so she finally just figured out that she was a nightshade sensitive person, not only sensitive, but actually, you know, pretty darned allergic.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so tell us how that works. And,
yeah.
You know, how
I talked about
similar that is
the
your
diet. And so that's, grain-free, legume-free, nightshade-free. If you have nuts and seeds, they need to be soaked overnight. And what you're doing is you're going on a much lower lectin load. And the people who are most likely to need that are people who have an autoimmune condition involving their joints, such as systemic lupus, rheumatoid arthritis, psoriatic arthritis, ankylosing spondylitis, or inflammatory bowel disease. And then I put people on the elimination diet for ideally 6 months, but at least 3 months. And then we begin to gradually test back one ingredient at a time to sort out what that person can tolerate. I'll also use the Walls elimination diet if I put them on the Walls paleo diet, they're still having symptoms, we haven't gotten the level of results that I want. I'll then go to the elimination diet and see if we get the results there. And if we still don't get the results that I want, I will then do this much more aggressive functional medicine testing to sort out what are all the other factors we have to address.
Terry, what kind of tests do you like? Are you running like cross-reactivity, or what were you like playing old tests, or how, what do you think are some of the top tests?
Well, you know, again, it's going to depend on the environments in which I'm practicing. So in the VA environment, then I'm limited to some pretty basic things, lipids, vitamin D, homocysteine, insulin levels, and I may do a variety of B vitamin mineral levels based on the physical exam. On the outside, in private practice, then you might do something like a NutriEval to understand the biochemical markers of metabolism. That can be very, very helpful. You might do a genetic testing to understand the SNPs, but I would combine the two to understand the genetics and what the metabolism is that's working, because you I find it helpful to interpret both that way. And the food and anti-self antibody measures that Cyrex Labs has, that can be very helpful in terms of a monitoring. So we can use those antibody assays to know that the antibody levels are falling or not. And there are circumstances where more extensive toxin load tests may be appropriate.
Yeah. And, you know, plants are known to have resistance to, against, I don't know how you pronounce it, herbivores, you know, like animals that eat plants.
Yeah. Right.
So they've got these natural chemicals in them.
Right.
How do you think that plays into this?
It's like insecticides. So this is sort of the great debate that I have with carnivore diet folks. And so the carnivore diet, people would tell you that for some individuals, the compounds in plants, these lectins, generate a vigorous immune response to us. And that in order to turn that off, if you quit eating any plants and you consume only animal products, that you'll have less of that immune response. But we don't have any ongoing research on the carnivore diet, folks, in terms of what are the metabolic effects, what happens to the lipids, what happens to your risk of heart disease, stroke, in neurodegenerative disease. I think it's an interesting area to investigate. When I try to evaluate, can I leave someone on an intervention the rest of their life, I look to either what the research tells me going through PubMed. I also look at what human evolution will tell me if I look for the ancestral health principles, and can I find societies that have implemented this kind of diet or lifestyle pattern that have evidence that they've tolerated it well for, you know, preferably thousands and preferably hundreds of thousands, or at least tens of thousands of years. Then I'm going to feel very comfortable that, okay, that's probably a reasonable thing to include. Therefore, when I look at the questions about the carnivore diet, I see that the Arctic folks do have a largely carnivore diet for large parts of the year. During the summer, they will have some plants. So they're never 100% animal-based year-round. I've not been able to find any other society that is 100% animal-based year-round. When you are animal-based, you don't get vitamin C. And humans can't make vitamin C. If you eat the meat raw, you'll tolerate it better. You'll probably need less vitamin C, and you'll still get some. And the Inuit, the Arctic folks, the animals that they were consuming were mostly marine-based. And it's really very, very different than the kind of animals that are. So it's reluctant to do it long-term. My colleague said, you may be on more research. At the very least, do case reports and case series and a cross-sectional survey of what people's experiences are and what their metabolic profile is. I don't have any data to help tell patients the risk of trying. What's the risk of long term? So.
Yeah. Go ahead. I think you're breaking up there a little bit.
Well.
Yeah, that's what I'm hearing too. The last 30 or 45 seconds are a little bit choppy, but I think maybe it's coming through still on the recording, I hope.
Well, I'm hoping it's coming through. Unfortunately, we already identified that my landline has a background buzz. That's too annoying. So we have to make do with myself.
It's okay. Yeah.
You're sounding good now.
Joe Mercola, Brandon, Joe Mercola just had an article. I talked about the phytoalexin. Phytoalexin are antimicrobial, antioxidative substances in certain plants, and they're just known to be, they make them pretty toxic for even people, but certainly animals. I've got neighbors with goats.
Yeah,
I live out in the country.
Let me speak to that.
Okay.
These compounds do provide some mild cellular stress. It's something called hormesis. And as long as you have a wide variety of plants and you have this diversity, this is what our ancestral biology expects. This wide variety of plants in our diet, and animals too for that matter. If we have the same plant every day, those toxins will accumulate. If we have a lot of variety, those toxins provide the necessary stress that we need to optimally signal our cells for greater metabolic efficiency. Our bodies need some stress. If we don't have stress, we don't shape our skeleton appropriately. If we don't have this stress of chewing, we don't shape our jaw and airways appropriately. If we don't have the stress of intermittent ketosis because we had to do a lot of exercise or go 16 hours or longer without eating, we don't have that metabolic flexibility in our cellular biology. Are very adaptable. We can eat a wide variety of things. And historically, if we look at the anthropology and we know over time, we went from being herbivores as primates to gradually being omnivores, and we have much more biological DNA evolution eating a mixed diet of plant material and animal material. We may have, if people can, we may have a small part of the human family that lives in the Arctic that consumes a predominantly meat based diet 10 months out of the year. So this, for people to say that, toxic. We need small amounts of that hormetic exposure to have our cells function. Some of our vitality is more exposed to that.
Yeah. So I'm not buying. I mean, the article that I mentioned where we talked about the phytoalexin, it was an argument for just eating all meat. But as you mentioned, that you're going to miss out on some pretty important vitamins if you do that.
And the people who advocate eating only meat, they talk a lot about the benefits of hormesis. They talk about the benefits of these high-intensity workouts, they may talk about the benefits of ketosis. It's all the same sort of concept that hormesis is a really good thing for physiology. They don't want to acknowledge that plant hormesis is also helpful, and that's why these phytochemicals that are toxic in high doses are a problem. In small doses, they improve our cellular efficiency and metabolic pathways, which is why if you, people read my book, listen to me talk, I'm always saying the goal is 200 different plant species in a year. And I try to get 100 different plant species in a week.
Wow. Yeah.
Impressive.
And you know what? There's so much fun to cook and prepare and new exotic things. We're kind of lucky we live in that kind of a world where, until recently, we could get around a lot and try all these different things. Before we go, what is the best way that you prefer for people to find and buy your book?
Yeah, so go to Terry Walls, T-E-R-R-Y, Walls, W-A-H-L-S.com. And right now, we're also offering some bonuses. So if you do terrywalls.com/bonus, you'll see by ordering a book, we give you access to a slew of bonuses to help support implementing the protocol and give you links to all the bonus materials we mentioned in the book itself. So terrywalls.com/bonus.
Okay, well, that's great. Any word on the coronavirus before we go?
Do everything you can to have a more nutrient-dense diet. Get rid of the sugar. Get rid of the high glycemic index food. Eat liver once a week. Eat sauerkraut, greens, and have some more sulfur, like garlic, onions. Would also be really good for rebalancing your immune cells so you are more resilient should you acquire the virus.
Perfect. I'm going to let Brendan finish this off here. But thank you, Terry, so much. It's really been great to talk to you. And I'll see you at the next retreat, I think.
Sounds like a plan. I'm looking forward to it.
Awesome.
Okay.
Hey, Dr. Walls, thanks for being on. We appreciate all the work that you've done. A lot of people definitely can say that, but in the work you're continuing to do. And another voice out there that's right in harmony with what we teach with the FDN course. And we appreciate you, and thanks for your time being on the call today. And, again, wish the best. And, guys, check out the new book. The bonus is there. Grab that. Pick that up. You need to keep sharpening your skills. And, guys, we'll be on next week, and we'll be talking again, answering your questions. And, guys, stay safe out there. Have a good one. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, everybody.